Let's talk about think. That's kind of an interesting title for a session, but thinking about design is important. So I want to talk to you more about thinking and how to leverage some of the things that we learned in the Metro session, and then some of the best practices that Karina shared with us in the second session, right? So thinking about design is basically, a change of mindset, and it is putting design first before coding, and even before, I will say, Photoshop or Illustrator. Doing thinking about your application will render in better results for your app. Now, our natural tendency as developers is when we think of a Windows Phone application idea, we go directly into Visual Studio because it's our environment and we feel comfortable there and we start coding and creating the app. If we're designers, we jump directly into Photoshop or Illustrator and we start designing the UI and thinking how it will look like, even before thinking what the app should be or what it should do. So when I say think, or the design thinking process, I'm not talking only about visual design or making things pretty. I'm talking about design in the larger sense of the word, which includes everything, right? Designing the experience. So today I want to talk to you about a couple things. I think we're going to have time to cover mostly design-driven process and ideation techniques. And then we're going to take a little bit about the others with a golf sample golf application that I'll show you. So let's talk about design-driven process. There's always bad design, see? Let me change this to white so you guys can actually read this. There is no alternative to no design. There is only good or bad design. So some people think that they can choose whether they want to add a little bit of design or a lot of design to their products. And if they decide not to add design, then they won't have that problem. They won't have to deal with that problem. But when it comes to design, there's only good or bad design. Design is will always be there. This leads us to talk a little bit about what we need to do good design. And as you know, there's been a lot of conversation in the last few years about the need of us or our teams developing both sides of the brain. If you have a team, you will want to partner, you will want to have people who can give balance to your team, people who can think of in a rational, functional, logical, sequential manner, and then also people who can be more spontaneous and intuitive and perhaps drive things a little bit crazier. But in order to create digital experiences today, you really need a balance of both. The times where software was simply a functional need and a functional process are definitely gone, especially now with things like phone and some of the other platforms that are being created. When we think of our applications, it has to be the same way. It's not about making them just pretty, not to make them about just functional, but also about thinking of the entire experience. And the only way for designers and developers to come up with great experience ideas is to have a process, a production process, a little bit kind of what this curve is showing. This is the design process approach to creating an app. In this case, you allow yourself and your team to define your idea, to explore ideas, to define the concept of your ideas, and to refine them before you even start production or programming or coding or even final visual design in Photoshop. All of those things come over there. Now, this curve shows the potential risk of having problems or finding user interaction issues. When we do this and we allow us to explore our ideas first, you bring the risk of the project, the risks of the project forward in time when it's much less expensive to fix these issues than when you're in production. I'm sure we've all gone through the case where we've been programming or coding or designing for 3 months, and then we start testing our application, our idea with users, maybe in a focus group or something, and we start getting feedback like users don't get it, or they don't care about that particular feature, or this particular flow that we've been working so hard on, it just doesn't work. And sometimes we discover that, and that's really expensive after you've been programming. So allowing yourselves to explore is explore first before committing is much better. And to that point, in the design studio, in the Windows Phone Design Studio, we use these three filters or pillars to help us assess how good a feature in a product is in general. Have the business filter, technical, and experience. Business is how viable is this product. Technical is how feasible, how easy can we actually implement it. And experience, how desirable it will be. That's kind of what makes a difference. And this actually is a good way for you guys to evaluate your application idea or specific features inside of your application. Pass those features through these three filters. And if you notice that one feature is kind of weak under experience or business or technical, maybe that's one feature that could be cut, or at least cut on V1, on version 1. Perhaps in V2, you will have more followers or more users of your app, and you will be able to attack that particular problem. But if you notice that one of your features is kind of weak in one of those three corners, chances are that feature is not critical for the success of your application. What we're talking about here is about the process of going from think to make. So we think, we plan, we explore, we define our concept, and then we make it happen towards the end. So to that point, let's talk a little bit about ideation techniques. I'm sure we've all read this quote. We've all heard this quote before. Every block of stone has a statue inside it, and it's the task of the sculptor to discover it. So we all have tons of ideas, right? And when it comes to creating a Windows Phone app as well as any other app, it's all a matter of allowing you to explore some of those ideas to find the right ones to bring into your application. This is the ideation process. And again, sorry about the color there. But we have three stages: brainstorming, exploration, and consolidation. Brainstorming is all about full freedom, giving yourself or giving your team full freedom to explore ideas and to come up with tons of them. You want to have tons of those ideas. Exploration is about learning and understanding some of those ideas. Not all of them, but some of them. Some of the ones that start making more sense or that start giving you a good feeling. Those are the ones you start picking. Some of the ones that relate better to other ideas, those are the ones you explore, learning and understanding them. And consolidation, the last step, is about making decisions. It's the opposite of this one. In this one, it's all crazy and wild. And over there, it's about having a structured process to select which of those ideas, which you now learned about and understood, which of those makes sense in your application. So let's talk about brainstorming. What is the output on brainstorming? Ideas, stories, emotions. What are some of the risks? Mainly just one. In a brainstorming session or sessions or even stage, you don't want to restrict yourself of others thinking freely about a particular problem. What are the skills needed? Some of those there: craziness, delusion, imagination, poetry. Like, being crazy sometimes actually kind of helps in this stage. But we'll go through a couple ideas to learn how to then take those. I'll give you a few concepts of how you can take some of those ideas and bring them back to the ground so you can actually create your app. So brainstorming has three steps: generating ideas, relating ideas to each other, and presenting your ideas. This is one activity. It's called subject, verb, and object, or subjects, verbs, and objects. And what this is all about is basically you ask people, your team, or maybe with friends, to write three words. They can write a subject, then one verb, and one object around a particular context. For example, imagine that we were designing a restaurant or a dining companion application. And I'm going to leave it at that because it's just broad, right? It's not specific. It's a restaurant or dining companion application, right? So mention one subject that you can think of when going out for dining, right? It could be a cook, waiter, girlfriend, grandparents, children, different personas that participate in the process. Now, one verb. What type of verbs or action do you think of when eating, when going out for dining? Actually, eating would be one. Paying, yelling, screaming, laughing, drinking, fighting. There could be all sorts of verbs. And then the third one is objects. What type of objects do we interact with when we go dining? Could be from things like car or subway that take you to the restaurant, to credit card or coins that you use to pay, food plate, fly. Maybe you got a fly in your soup or whatever. Like, it's just objects you get to interact with. So we did this exercise. We've done this exercise a couple of times in the tour, and we've come up with really interesting results when people. And if we have time at the end, maybe that's something we could do, actually. People come up with all these different words. And let me give you an example. Like, these are some of the words that some people in Barcelona came with in terms of subject. Someone actually wrote Messi, the player, which was kind of interesting, right? I would have never thought of that. But grandparents, kids, cook, waiter, friend, girlfriend. Someone had vegetarian girlfriend, right? Which I'm sure can give different challenges. But mother-in-law, another set of challenges, perhaps. I don't know. But people were coming up with these different type of words, right? And when it came to verbs, it was the same thing. They had verbs that I would have never thought of when it came to a restaurant. And the same thing with objects. What happens then is, after you have people do this exercise, perhaps with post-it notes, you separate the people into smaller teams, perhaps two or three people, depending on how many people you have in your team. And then you have them go back to the wall and pick three words that they like, that you know, give them, that appeal to them. And so, for instance, I went and I did this exercise, and you know, I thought, well, messy, food, play, grandparents, food, play, kids, food, play. And these three words kind of spoke to me. Kids or children, food, play. And I was like, oh, that's kind of an interesting problem that before the exercise, the brainstorming exercise, I would have never thought of by myself. I don't have children, so that would have not come through my mind. But having another 50, 100 people in that particular room, and it could have been even less than that, gave me an idea of, wow, I could create an application to solve the problem of children playing with food. Again, I would have never come up with that. So what could we do? And I'm sure some of you are already like, ah, I could come up with an idea for that. How could I help solve the problem of parents or children themselves in the fact that children play with food when they go to restaurants? And so that's an interesting idea. So we have an idea for an application. Now, notice the difference, this different way of starting the design and the creation of an app, which was by doing some exercise like this, where we're thinking about the user and the user needs, versus a traditional approach to creating applications for phones. A traditional way of creating apps for phones is that we say something like, oh, what API is available on the web? Like, I don't know, there's the weather.com API, or CNN, or ESPN, or I don't know, any API, a translation API. So let's create an app that uses that API. And so we end up with applications that, sure, can be cool, but they are simply structured in a way that that don't really satisfy the needs of a particular user. The process that we follow, for instance, here is by thinking really about the needs of a particular user. And then you work on making the application look great. It can be, for example, a weather application, a sports news application. We saw Corina's weather application, which comes from a user need. And it's not only you know, the fact that there is the availability of an API, for instance. This one, for example, let's put these three words to the test. Food, children or kids play with food. So these are some techniques that can help you start exploring that idea. These are kind of fun to do with a team. The first one is called predicting the future. And in that technique, what you would do is you would have yourself or your small team write quotes of customers 6 months or 1 year from today about your app and how that app helped solve that problem, or what types of things are different in their experience of going to a restaurant after they use your app. So for example, you might write a quote from a mom that's very grateful to you. Thank you, developers, for creating this app. I don't have to wash clothes anymore, right? So washing clothes, so you exposed a particular problem or a particular consequence of people or of children playing with food. And again, now you understand more about the problem. If you write those quotes, it will help you understand the problem from another point of view. There are a few others, like ridiculous types of scenarios to do, like impossible. What would be an impossible? So imagine that I had not two kids or three kids, but imagine that I had 100 children and I took them to the restaurant. It's an impossible scenario for most cases, I'm guessing. So, but if you go to a restaurant, you have 100 children. As a parent, what would you have to do if you had 100 children? You somehow would need a mechanism to learn or remember all their names. Somehow, you would have to figure out which of them hang out better with others. There would, by, with 100 children, you will probably have a huge age difference, so you might have different group age groups there. Some of them will be vegetarian, maybe the older ones, or some spontaneous 5-year-old vegetarian kid, I don't know. So you might have like all these special needs within your 100 children, right? If you think of them as your children, you will start identifying some of those big needs that you have. Now, let's bring that back to the ground, right? I don't have 100 children, but if I think of a restaurant, I can certainly imagine that a restaurant would have 100 children at the same time, right? So now let's transfer all those things we learned that I would do as a parent to take care of my 100 children. Let's transfer them to the restaurant owner responsibility or desire to help these 100 children have a good time while they're at the restaurant. And so now you can imagine all sorts of ideas for an application. For instance, maybe the application ends up creating a sort of like a social media to help kids socialize or find activities within the restaurant that they can do. Maybe they can meet each other or something like that. I don't know. There are like all these other opportunities open by having allowed yourself to an impossible scenario. It's always important in that case to think on the impossible, but then find how that could connect to the real world, of course. Alternate worlds. Alternate worlds would be, imagine that the restaurant was in the moon, right? So that's an alternate world. What would happen if a kid grabs a meatball, a Swedish meatball, and throws it, right? What would happen? Well, the meatball would kind of fly much farther, right? So that gives you an idea. Again, how do we bring that back to the ground? Well, what if we create an app / game, I guess, in that case, where you allow kids to play with food in the phone itself. And in the food, they can smash it, they can throw it, they can do the mess, whatever mess they want. And the screen really gets messy. Not Metro at all. You have them like to go crazy, right? So again, you would have never figured out that type of idea if you had not exposed your idea to an alternate world. In other shoes, this one is also very crazy. Makes people laugh. But again, it's kind of fun exercises you can do with your team. In other shoes, it's very simple for me to say, oh, imagine that I was the waiter, right? Or the manager of the restaurant. That's kind of more typical. But push it further and imagine that you are the, like I always say, the spaghetti plate, right? So now, what do you do as a spaghetti plate? Well, when you get to a restaurant, you're not a spaghetti plate. You arrive like in different items, right? You're a pasta, you're a tomato sauce. Then you enter the storage, which means there's a storage place in the restaurant, obviously, right? A cook will prepare you before you are being ordered, after you're being ordered. And so they will prepare you, they will cook you, they'll put you in a bar, and the waiter or the waitress will pick up the dish, and they will take it to the person whoever ordered. You're going to be eaten, ta-da-da. So by allowing you to think like a spaghetti plate, you will expose yourself to the process of what happens in a restaurant from the time that it receives their supplies, store them, cook them, and serve them. That's something that, for example, if I'm not a restaurant expert, I would have never thought of, oh, look, there are supplies, there is a storage, and you know, if food is not eaten or prepared in X amount of days, they might expire. I want to throw those away. So could that start giving us some ideas for an app to keep to keep track of those types of things that are happening on the back of the, you know, the back of the kitchen. So again, ideas to help you explore and think from other points of view. The next thing you want to do is you want to start relating ideas to each other. And for these, there are different ways that you can do. It's important that all these ideas start coming together. So if you have different groups, and some groups have been thinking about like gaming-related ideas, or perhaps I started thinking more about these infrastructure and process type of ideas like inventory that I was mentioning at the end, then chances are that your app could probably become a good investment if you start going to that side of a particular need or the experience of restaurants and dining in general. After you started relating your ideas, or you've related your ideas, the next thing is to present your ideas. And this is a really good idea to do it. It's called pechakucha. It means chit-chat in Japanese. And it's a very popular style amongst designers and architects. You know, it's actually has become popular amongst corporate people, etc. It's basically about presenting 20 slides, and you have 20 seconds per slide. This is a little bit more than 6 minutes. What this format forces you to do is it forces you to clean up your presentation in the way that you share these ideas with other people from garbage or things that is not critical to convey the concepts that you explored. This is an exercise that starts, again, bringing you back to the ground after having gone, you know, to the moon and being a spaghetti plate and all those things. It starts forcing you back down to communicate really what's needed. It's a filtering process. You can learn more about this in pecha-kucha.org. Pechakucha.org. It's like a huge organization. And this is something I think it's going to be easy for me to change the text to yellow. So this is like a huge organization just around Pechakucha. They have like sample slides and sample videos that show how to do some of these presentations. So this one, I'm going to switch to this other slide deck here. When exploration, we're going to do some early design. So what do we do here? We're going to be defining the user journey. And the user journey is basically defining the experience that the user will have for this particular app. In this case, I want to illustrate this point with a golf app. The first thing, as we mentioned before, when you start your app, you want to allow yourself and your team to think big, think in groups. That will always give you really good ideas. The next thing that you can start doing is to start landing some of those ideas into some actual application flow charts. Application flow charts, or application flow, is basically starting to explore how your application will be structured. What's the general structure of your application? You don't have to be precise. You don't have to have beautiful screens or anything like that. In fact, you could simply use sketches. In this case, this is a more refined type of style that we use sometimes in the studio. We call it Metro Map, just because it makes it feel kind of like a subway or Metro Map type of thing. But you don't have to start there. You could go to something like this. Or, I believe I actually have an expression design file here to show you. This one. A lot of times you will start with a document that is kind of like this. I wouldn't even call these specs. These mostly like what in the web world we would call a sitemap, basically the top functions and sections. Once you have that, you can start exploring. It's basically a flow. It's kind of like a flow chart, right? You start exploring some of the key areas. In this particular case, I like to use different typography or text to start conveying structured information. So I will have an app hub or a main landing app hub. I don't know yet if this will be a panorama or it will be a pivot. I don't know yet. But I know this is going to be, I need something to welcome my user. And then I know I will need four key sections. Restaurants, expenses, reports, settings. Again, I still don't know whether these guys will be pivots, panoramas, or what. But I start exploring how these things will flow. These are more refined version of the same app flow. And here, we've actually simplified the restaurants area. Now we're going to leverage the same results map across search results and favorites. We want to have these two lists, etc., etc. Here, I'm taking it to the next level. Right, so here I'm actually starting to add sub-options within each of these sections, and I'm starting to take certain decisions like, hey, maybe this will make sense as a pivot. Actually, most of these will be pivots in this case. There are some others that could be a page, like this main menu. This could be just a static page that welcomes me without any pivot type of functionality. But in some cases, you might also say, this could tend to be a panorama. But look how we still have not even designed the panorama. We're just starting to explore what the information is asking for, right? It's sometimes like the information will tell you what type of control it wants to be in. So coming back to the slide deck, this is just another format of doing the same thing. I just think this probably takes a little bit longer, but this is actually a cool way of understanding a more complex structure. And when you do those application flow charts, you can go from low fidelity to something that starts going more high fidelity like this. And really, the thing we're talking about here is just information architecture. I'm sure many people in the room have been doing information architecture for a long time. And I realized, oh no, I am. I thought I wasn't wearing the microphone. Notice how here, for instance, this is a wireframe-based app flow. It's still the same type of app flow chart that I was showing you before, but here we can actually start seeing some initial UI elements be displayed. It's still at the wireframe level. They don't have to be perfect. Maybe they don't have the right alignment yet, but it doesn't matter. It starts telling the story. Basically, all of this is meant to help you tell the story to other people in your team or to even clients. And you can do this by simply sketching things out. If you're comfortable with sketching, you can sketch. If you prefer to do things in Visio, I know many developers have been using Visio for a while. Visio is a great tool to come up with some of these type of pre-visualizations. And then you can take these much further until you get to a visual polish or something that's more polished. A lot of times we're tempted to start working on the visual polish because it looks kind of more cool than that, right? But these can communicate. This might have taken you, I don't know, 30 minutes to do or less. This might have taken you a few days, perhaps. So at the beginning, when you're exploring, you just want to do things quickly. During one of the breaks was talking about paper prototyping. Paper prototyping talks about the same thing. You can do paper prototyping with this quality of graphics, and you can also do paper prototyping with this quality of graphics. But if it's your first attempt at trying out your idea with other people, then chances are this will be much less expensive to do than this. So let's take some of these elements and let's start exploring how this golf application could work like. In this particular case, it's going to be an application that will help us kind of socialize the activity of golfing and will help us invite people to join us. One of the ideas that we can share with you on coming up with your design is to start thinking about the tiles close to the beginning of the process, because your tiles are a great example or a great representation of your branding. If your branding says, you know, your app will be white, green, and black, and that is information I got from that particular logo, not even from designing or doing other exploration or asking what users wanted, it's just my branding, then by doing the tiles, you will start setting a framework for your application and how it will look. When it comes to tiles, there is a star tile, which is much bigger than the little tile that basically launches your application. Both can launch your application, but that is the one that can have the notifications. This is a live tile anatomy chart. This is something that's better understood when seen close. So again, all these materials will be available for you. But this basically just communicates the different dimensions for the tiles, how you can layer things like notifications on top of your image, like the PNG image, for doing some alpha composite work like the one we saw on the first session. And here we start exploring the actual app. Now here, this is the splash screen. This control, this loading control you see here, it's an out-of-the-box weight control, weight cursor control is called. I believe we briefly saw that one when we were talking about progress bars. Notice the use of the branding of the app that we've been talking about before, the use of the image, and we already talked about how the sky was probably blue when this image was licensed, but this image was edited. Notice also how the designer emphasizes a couple different layers of depth here. This is the foreground and the background. The background is blurred out. If you have designers in the audience, I'm sure you can spot some Photoshop cloning there. But it starts giving you kind of that feeling of depth without making this 3D. This is the welcome menu that would receive people once the users, once they get into the inside of the application. Notice we have some really nice spacing in between these main options, which takes us back to that concept of the touchable area for elements and the concept of green lines. So this will generate no confusion in people, or it will make it easy for them to easily tap each of these options. Also notice that this blurry background is the same one we had here. And I believe the designer there, what he was trying to communicate is, number one, continuity. So you have an element that welcomed you, and that element kind of walks with you, almost literally in this case, to the main menu. And also it kind of sells the idea of, look, I'm in the foreground and I'm going to go deeper into the app. And in that particular case, it's kind of metaphorically also communicates that you have entered the app. Here we have a pivot list. And these, we talked a lot about panorama in the first session, but we didn't talk a lot about pivot. This is the pivot control. Pivot is also a control that acts and works by swiping to the right or to the left. It has pivot items on top. Like here we have three, recent, nearby, and all. Pivots can be used in different ways, but one of the fundamental uses of a pivot control is when you have a database with a common set of items inside of it, and you want to present those items ordered or filtered in different manners. So for example, here we have three pivots. The first one is recent. So these are the recently visited golf courses. Then we have nearby golf courses. And then we have all golf courses. They're all golf courses, but they are sorted in different ways. And another design idea here is that even though it's the same information, notice how each pivot is presenting the information in different ways. Here, for example, in nearby, the concept of location becomes kind of critical, right? It's obviously critical. And so we expose a map control in a very elegant way, touching all the way to the edges on the right and the left. Notice also we are pinpointing at least the top four courses that are close to us. If we tap over the map, we would be taken to a full screen map experience as we saw in the first session. Now, this one over here are all the courses. Now, when we talk about all the courses, we could talk about 300 of them. So if we have people, you know, swipe through a list many, many times, it's not going to work great, right? So we added this concept of a quick jump list. So if you tap over letter A or the letter B, you will receive an index of letters or characters, and that will help you navigate much faster. There is a concept of the pivot lookup or title. In this case, this is the one, select a course. And this is usually used in uppercase letters. All of them are uppercase. And it can be a verb. It's helpful when it's a verb because it starts conveying the user the fact that they need to take action on choosing something and doing something here. It's not just for viewing the information. It's to help them make a decision and choose something. Now, another design idea here for you guys is, if you are finding it easy to explain what this whole pivot with these three pivot items can do in a small phrase like this one, select a course, chances are your pivot is well designed. If you start, you know, if you start having a harder time coming up with this pivot lockup, maybe because some of your pivots do something similar and others do something different, chances are something in your information architecture might be off. And perhaps that thing that is not helping you come up with a good title for your pivot could probably live at a different level or in a different control. List view templates, we showed and talked about some of these. It's very flexible control. This is the screen that we see before we select a course. Now here, notice it's a pivot, so course information, right? So in this course information, we have information from the same database. In this case, it's the golf course that we are about to select. And the information is visualized in different ways. About the golf course, reviews of the golf course, but everything comes from the same source. Now, notice here again, the use of images, super clean. And the use of typography here is important. We usually get, I've gotten at least a couple questions about, hey, why is the word phone larger than the actual phone number, right? And the thing here is, if you think about it with the phones that we have these days, I don't think I even remember or know the numbers of my friends. I just know their names and their faces, and I tap on the contact and the phone call is placed. I don't need to know the phone number. So in this case, based on that understanding, turns out that the most important thing here is the word phone, because all of this becomes an item that I can touch and a phone call will be placed. Same thing for directions, right? This would take me to a map and the website would take me to a website. Of course, the number is there if I needed it for some reason, but that starts talking again about the concept we mentioned on the first session, which is structured information and using typography to convey function. Also notice here we have this button to say, yes, I want to go to this course, we're going to this course. And this one is living inside of this, and honestly, I'm not entirely sure if this is officially a nav bar, because it doesn't have even an ellipsis. It is a nav bar, right? Yes. So, and one of the things that you might notice here is that this button is there by itself, but it communicates very clearly, right? The fact that it's on its own, that this is empty, again, back to the concept of white space, emphasizes the function in the center and just highlights to the user that if they like that course, they can hit the check mark and go forward. If they didn't end up deciding they don't like this course, then they would use the back button in the hardware to do it. Why didn't we put a back button here visually? Because it would duplicate the functionality that the hardware back button already has. So in general, you will never use a back button in the user interface itself, but the user will rely, because by then they will know that the back button can take them to a step before in their navigation stack. This is another pivot. This also has three pivot items. Same data source, players. These are players now. Friends, groups, and all golf players. And each of those pivot items are being displayed in different ways. Friends will allow you to select from this list box friends that you want to go out and play with. Groups, this very cool way, the designer came up with this grid, four of them in this particular case. And these are people who, you know, they might belong to a particular club, or maybe they're really good, maybe these guys are not that good. All of them, well, again, you could have 300 players. So we have a quick jump list. In this case, it's divided by state. Could have been divided or ordered alphabetically just as well. But again, same concept as we talked about before. Here's a quick jump list. So you would tap Alabama, and that would display all those different states you can quickly navigate to. This is a context menu. We briefly mentioned context menu on the first session. If you tap and hold on an object, you would get these options. You would get additional options to work to work with for that particular item. Delete, edit golfer, or add to another group. Now, one of the things that a lot of people tend to do initially in Windows Phone apps, because that's the way it's done in other platforms in terms of design, is you would have one little button here that reads delete, another one edit, another one add to group. And then you would have the same three little buttons here and here and here, that type of concept. So in Metro, again, with the goal of reducing elements from the UI, the tap and hold metaphor to show additional options for an object becomes really important. This is the final screen before we start our round in the golf course. Here you can see a summary. It's a static information about basically a summary of who you are going out with and what golf course you're playing at. And we have this big button that says start round. Now, a couple screens before, I showed you a nav bar with a single check mark at the center, right? Why didn't we decide to go for a nav bar here? The reality is we could have chosen just as well to use a nav bar with a single button with an icon that implied start round or go, right? Get started. In this particular case, I think the preference for the designer to stay with this type of button is because this is not a pivot control, this is not a panorama, this is just one single page. And application bars tend to emphasize also the persistence of some of their functions across different pages or screens in a panorama or a pivot. So it probably wasn't critical here, but it could have been also used. We saw this screen before because of this infographic, which looks nice because it's floating on top of the background. And here we have an example of a custom control. There was another one before that I didn't show you guys, but this is a custom control. This does not come out of the box, but it looks Metro. What this control does is it will help you keep track of the number of hits per player for a particular hole. It just has a couple buttons and the number. It looks Metro because it's respecting the 24 pixels to the right. It's aligned to all the other objects. It's following the grid, and it just looks balanced. It's also using color to convey information. So while our color has been green so far, notice we're using red to immediately highlight who is losing this particular in this particular hole. And again, that's kind of using color to emphasize function, which is very cool. The other custom control I didn't highlight to you is this one. You select players and they get added here. They get added to these cells. Again, this looks Metro because we're respecting 24 pixels here, 24 pixels here, 12 pixels in between these two cells, and these four are following are right on top of the grid. The color is still the same as the branding color for this particular application. So you are totally free to create custom controls and design custom controls. And if you follow the grid, if you followed some of the typography, iconography ideas that we've shared with you, you know, you will be in a good path to do a custom control or design a custom control that matches well the Metro design language. These are some infographics that we've seen before. Again, very clear, very clean, floating on top of the page. These are just some out-of-the-box controls, which, you know, you can probably just use them literally out of the box. You could have customized this background to look green or something like that, but that would have probably made the branding color of this particular app being overused. It wasn't really critical. Notice the use of this app bar, even though this is not a pivot or a panorama. Again, it is possible, and in this case, it sends two very clear messages. Do you want to accept or do you want to cancel? This kind of setting, you can change some of the settings here. Someone asked us in a previous event, why did we have a cancel or this button if we already had the back button? Because this kind of seems to contradict what I said in a previous screen, right? And the thing here is that we need a cancel button because if someone made some changes and they, at the end, they say like, oh no, I don't want them, if you hit the back button, they would probably be saved. And so with a cancel, you are forcefully saying, I don't want them, and I will dismiss them. This is a design recommendation for a text box. If you tap a text box like this one, the keyword will be displayed and the text box will be pushed up. So one design recommendation here is that try not to have, this basically is pushing all these controls outside of view, right? So you don't wanna, a design recommendation here is to not have elements that are critical for the user to see or have available at the time that he or she is typing be pushed up. In that case, you could just bring them lower, or just make, in this particular case, the comments box a little smaller. It will depend on your particular scenario. And finally, when it comes to orientation, we talked a little bit about orientation before in the sessions. A typical approach that we have when designing phone apps is, I don't know if I have my phone here, but yeah. So anyway, when we design phone apps and orientation is we think in terms of portrait and landscape. And landscape, we always kind of say, well, how will landscape look? Well, I'll have to rearrange or relay out my items so that they look nicely on landscape and portrait, right? That's kind of the typical approach. But a better approach is to think in terms of the experience. In this case, I thought the designer was super smart in realizing that the landscape mode didn't have to be this same UI rearranged. Instead of that, he thought, well, the landscape mode should be used for what it can give a better experience, for where it could give a better experience. And, of course, a scorecard is something that's very common when you play golf. It's in horizontal mode, and it allows you to store a lot of information, much better than in this type of format. Even if we had a panorama, that's just better, can convey more information. So it's a read-only experience there where you can quickly see a summary. And so the application, when you rotate it, it actually turns and transforms the function into something completely different. That's another way of thinking about orientation. So now, after the exploration and some of these ideas on design, the designer created a video that kind of visualizes the way that this application will look like and will feel like once it's built. So I'm going to play you a video which was created using Adobe After Effects, and which is a very cool program. If you guys know how to use it, this is a great way to explore some of these ideas. But it's not the only tool that you could use to create these pre-visualizations. You could use Expression Blend. You could use, and I always ask for forgiveness, but yeah, you could use PowerPoint as well if you wanted to. Because as long as you can convey animation and you can convey transitions and interactivity, which you can certainly do in Blend and PowerPoint and After Effects, all these things can help you tell the story before you actually build the app. So let's play this little video where we're simply going to see all these concepts we've been reviewing in action. Now, again, this is not the actual app. It's just a mock-up of the app. You can see the loader there. Notice the swing on top, which was done using a kind of a cheap trick. Main menu. I say cheap trick because splash screens are just one flat screen. I believe the way that was done is that when you actually get to the application, that's when the animation plays, not in the splash screen, because you cannot play animations in the splash screen. So this is a pivot, the first pivot that we reviewed, recent, nearby, all, just list boxes. We're going to select one item. You saw the tilt effect, which Corina demonstrated in her session. We get to this particular page, and we're going to start exploring this pivot, which shows friends. This is friends, screen number one. And then these are the groups, also a list. And again, lists can be customized. If you have experience with Silverlight, you know that every control is customizable. These are all the friends. This is a quick jump list that we talked about before. You can hit the back button and go back to your friends. And now we're going to start selecting some of these friends to go out with to the golf course and play. So we're going to say one. Those are being placed up there in that custom control on the top. Of course, we're in the phone, so we get a text message from Tiger Woods saying he's going to join eventually. There he is. So now we have our four friends that we're going to play with. And turns out that Ricky Barnes is not playing anymore. So tap and hold, delete. Again, much better approach than having little delete buttons on every item. So go back to this thing off, hit the start round button, and then you can see that custom control that I mentioned in action. And the thing about that control, this one is that when the process the designer went through is, you know, he said, okay, when people tap here, I could show up the keyboard, right? But a keyboard has letters and has symbols that are not needed for this particular scenario. Then the designer also was like, well, I could show the phone keyboard, but the phone keyboard also has some symbols and items that are not critical for this particular scenario. And so that's how, you know, the designer ended up getting to the conclusion that if he really wanted to get the best experience, he actually had to create a custom control which would truly abstract the function to the experience that they were looking for. Let's hit play. We're almost done. Have that infographic we talked about, some of these out-of-the-box controls. Good separation between them, all aligned with the 24 pixel to the left. And now we're rotating the phone. And we can see how, again, instead of trying to reaccommodate all portraits so that it looks nice in landscape, we are using landscape for something that makes more sense. And in many cases, actually, that might even be easier because if you've designed websites, if you don't, especially in web design, and you try to design for different like proportions and different sizes, you know, it's actually a lot of work to rearrange the divs so that they can wrap content properly. It's actually a lot of work when sometimes something like this actually ends up giving a better experience to the user. So, let me skip this. And yeah, so we're gonna have a break. It's 4:50, right?